Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Just before we jump into the episode this week, I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections, like the main Thrive community feed, where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones, because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are Thrive events, there are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section, and then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well, and in the knowledge hub you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days, so if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program, there's a toolkit, there's understanding the brain science, and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I've got a bit of a special one, actually, because I've got my first husband and wife sober team on the show. So I'm going to be talking to Alicia and Ricky, and they're based in West London, and they've got about 317 days of sobriety each. I think, Ricky, you might be like a little bit ahead, but yeah, wonderful to have you both here on the show. This is new for me. So,
Thank you for being my first couple.
No, thank you. It's really exciting because you were one of the first podcasts I found very early on into my sobriety that really pushed me and helped me to continue. So I'm super excited to see you today.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, I'm really excited as well. We've been trying to get this lined up for a while, haven't we?
Yes,
thank you for the patience, and I'm delighted that we're together now. So why don't we go into introductions? You know, tell us a bit about yourself, who you are, and then we'll go into your stories. So Alicia, start with you.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm Alicia. I'm in my late 30s now. We are a married couple. We've been together for 16 years as a whole. We've been married for 6 years. We have three boys together, and our eldest is 11, youngest is 2. So very busy. And we both have full-time jobs, so that's even more busy. And we're just struggling bringing them up. And yeah.
I'm 39, 40 this year. Yeah. Working full time, as Alicia says. We forgot to mention our middle one is 8 years old. So yeah, we're very busy. New boys, weekends are always chaotic. In the week is chaotic. Everything's chaotic, but
we're enjoying it.
I understand. I understand that chaos, because I've got three. You probably know that if you've listened to the show.
Yeah,
I've got three girls, so I'm the total opposite. So yeah, I've
I'm in that chaos with you.
Yeah.
which is good and bad. It's okay to say sometimes it's bad, I think, but
yeah.
The ups and downs. Why don't we talk about your lives with alcohol? Alicia, where did it start for you?
So growing up, alcohol was around me because my dad was a very heavy drinker. He was an alcoholic, but he's never admitted that he's an alcoholic, and he still continues to drink to this day. We were always allowed to have a sip of his drinks and have our own, like Christmas, New Year. It was never really frowned upon. I then started to drink when I was about 14 years old. And my dad was actually the one that would buy me and my friends drink. And it was like, there was no issue with it. We was never told, oh, we're not allowed to drink. So me and my friends would drink at the weekends in parks. And it was, well, to us, it was completely normal because everybody was doing it. It wasn't a big issue. So I don't think I had an issue as a teenager with alcohol because it was very normal. We would go out to pubs, we would go out to clubs, and yeah, it wasn't ever looked at by my parents, especially that it was a big issue. And my mum and dad had quite a volatile relationship, and I think now looking back, it was to do with the alcohol. And they split up when I was around 14 years old, and it was quite hard for us, especially me, because I'm the eldest. I've got two younger brothers, so my mum relied on me a lot to help her out and to get out of that relationship with my dad. And yeah, I don't remember it being fun times. And I did use, the only thing I do now look back and think, I did use alcohol as an escapism. So I would go out and drink with my friends and get completely battered, and I would be really drunk, really sick, and really silly. I was always the one that was the silliest out of all my friends. And I think I used that, I think because of what was going on at home, because everything was so serious at home, I was then really silly around my friends and just wanting to escape from that serious life. And yeah, I did that throughout my teens. And Ricky and I, we got together when, just before I was 21.
Yeah.
So we've been together for quite a while. And we were together for 5 years before we had our first son. And we would drink at weekends. It started off at, every day. It didn't start off every day. It was just weekends. We would have a drink, and then we would go out clubbing, and then we moved into our first flat. And I remember the first week of moving into our flat, like there was bottles of wine from every day that week, like just stacking up. And I was like, wow, oh my gosh, maybe this is what grown-ups do when they move into their own house, like drink it. I remember telling my friends, and they were like, yes, like you bought your first place together, like time to celebrate. And then we had our son, and I used alcohol to relax, to have a good time at the weekend, and sort of escape from that mum life because it was hard. Well, I did find our first son really hard. And also I went back to work quite early on, I think where he was about 9 or 10 months. And when I was bringing him up, I was extremely tired. I just remember it being a really tiring time. So I thought, I didn't have him, every opportunity I didn't have him, I would drink, because I thought that was going to relax me and that was going to help me like relax and sleep. And actually,
yeah,
if I could go back now, I would not, I would totally not done that. I wish I didn't, because it just made things harder.
It does. I feel that so much. It's really interesting when you were talking about when you were 14, 15, and obviously you had things going on at home, and that would have been quite traumatic for you at that age, you know, so that teenage those teenage years, they're so defining, aren't they? And I relate to you because I had problems at home. My parents didn't split up, but they should have done. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
They should have split up because there was always a lot of fights, a lot of arguing about my mum's drinking. And I was exactly like you. I went out and I was really silly. Like, I've never really said it in that way before, but that's exactly, I remember being the clown. And that kind of really sparked that clown personality for me. And it, like, the more people laughed at me, you know, I thought the funnier I was. And so I think that's what helped me do it more as I got into my 20s. And even my 30s, I was still being that clown because I think I probably got a lot of appreciation and acceptance and attention that I wasn't getting at home.
I know, it's quite sad when you think about it like that, because I'm sort of unpacking that all now. Now I've become sober, I'm starting to like think back because I've got a lot more time to think about it all now. And I just think, oh gosh, I just wasn't, I don't want to say like I wasn't nurtured properly, but that's probably the right way to put it, because I don't want to make anyone feel bad. Like, I'm very close to my mum, so I wouldn't want to say. But obviously she, at that time, I don't blame her, because at that time she was dealing with very abusive husband, and I don't blame her for not like totally putting all of her energy into what I was going through, because she couldn't. It's just now I'm unpacking it and realizing why I am, why I was the way I was and why I did certain things.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. And I think that's one of the most eye-opening bits of this journey, is when you do unpack some of that stuff. And I think that unpacking helps you to learn about who you are and hopefully grow some acceptance for yourself. Because I think, you know, the whole, especially having kids, right? I was the same. I drank a lot through my first kid, two kids. Really. Yeah. And I had a big breakup as well to deal with when they were really small, and alcohol was the only thing I had to get me through that, really. But there's much shame in that. It's like when you say, if I could go back now, I wouldn't do that. But at the time, not only do you think that that's normal, but you are also probably using that as a coping mechanism, you know, to have these children that are quite a big deal. quite a lot of work. And so, Ricky, what was it like for you?
I didn't really have any sort of issues with being around me as such. And my mum was a single parent, and she worked part-time so she could sort of be there as much as she can for me and my brother. So I never really experienced sort of two parents in the house sort of having a conflict or fashion sort of thing. There were stressful times, but I didn't really, alcohol wasn't really around me like that. My mum didn't drink. She doesn't drink to this day. If she does, it would just be a little one here and there. So alcohol wasn't really around me. Now, when I had my first drink, Alicia mentioned we've been together for 16 years. We've been married for six. But what she didn't say is that our families were very close together. So we've actually known each other since sort of Alicia was born. I'm 2 years older than Alicia. Aww. So our family, and we got pictures of us at sort of me at her first birthday party and stuff like that.
Oh, that's so nice.
So my first drink, when we went away, our families went away together on a holiday down to Devon. And Alicia's dad actually gave me my first drink. I remember it was a bottle of hooch. And I was about 13 or 14 years old. It was an orange hooch. And to be honest, that didn't sort of start any problems for me. I had that drink and that was it. That wasn't the point where I started drinking or anything.
Call my dad.
Yeah,
I thought I'd mention that. So I had a really bad experience, Terry, once when I think I was about 14 or 15. Was at a family function. Again, sort of drink wasn't an issue for me at this point. But I don't know, for some reason, I just wanted to drink that day. And it was a free bar because it was a family function. It was sort of at one of the houses. And I was going up to the bar and I was sneaking drinks, sort of brandy on the rocks. And I was going to the bartender and I was saying, oh, my auntie wants a drink. I'd run away and neck it. I'd say, oh, my mum wants a drink. I'd run away and neck it. My grand wants a drink. So I was making up these stories saying everyone wants a drink, but I was really going inside and drinking it. And I got really bad. I fell down the stairs and I became unconscious and ambulance came and had to take me to, I was in the hospital overnight and had to get my stomach pumped.
Oh, God.
And so that was a really bad experience for me. And after that, I didn't drink again until I was 21. I couldn't stand the sight of alcohol. I couldn't stand the smell of it. I couldn't walk down the alcohol aisle in a supermarket without feeling sick. So anyway, didn't drink till I was 21. I remember it was my 21st birthday and the lads were like, come on, Ricky, have a drink, have a drink, have a drink. And I had a drink. And that's when I got a taste for it again. And around that sort of time, I started working in a job in the garage, which a lot of the mechanics a lot of the workers, they're the people that I worked with, they would stay behind after work and drink. And they'd always ask me, you know, do you want to drink? You know, the artwork would finish. They'd bring the cars in, they'd bring the shutters down. And just to unwind and to relax, they'd have a drink. And I used to think to myself, what are you guys doing? Like, go home. Like, a lot of these guys were older than me with families, wives and kids. And I was like, go home to your family. What are you doing? Job for work, drinking. And, you know, because it was quite local to me, there'll be times where we finished at 6 and there'll be times where I drive past the garage maybe 8, 9, 10 o'clock and you can still see activity. They're still in there. So one day they asked me, you know, Ricky, do you want to have a drink with us? Do you want to stay with us? And I said, oh, okay, why not? I'll have a drink with you guys. And then that one drink one day turned into another day. And then another day. And then that's for me where I started to drink sort of more often, more so. Yeah, it became a habit. So went from one drink a week with them to two drinks to staying every day with them. And it became so sort of so bad, Terry, that even when I was on my day off, I'd go into the garage at 6 o'clock with them. So it's my day off and I'm going to work at 6 o'clock. I'm bringing bottles now for us, and I'm drinking with them. So it went from what you guys doing to going there on my day off to do the exact same thing with them. And that is how sort of my drinking really started. And at that age, I was about maybe 21, 22.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it as a problem. I was young. You know, these guys they're sort of way older than me, sort of 30s, 40s, and they're doing it. It's not a problem for them. I'm going to work every day. You know, we had a very good garage. We was, you know, hitting all our targets. We were working good. I didn't see it as a problem. So, yeah, that was how it all started for me, really.
Why not? You know, it's,
why not? Exactly.
Why not? Yeah. So how did it impact when your first child came along? Just getting the timeline here, was that kind of a few years after that then, would you say, like more mid to late 20s? How did the drinking impact you at that point? Were you still kind of going to the garage, or did you just, was it more in the home, or, you know, how did that look?
I think I changed job by Riley came, didn't I?
Yeah. So your job changed, so you didn't need to do that.
Yes.
You didn't actually do that at all when our children came.
Yeah, I didn't do that at all when our children came. I changed job by then. And as I say, like, at this point, I wouldn't say I was even hooked because I was able to stop it as I changed job. It was just my surroundings and the company I kept.
It wasn't until our second son came and things were a little bit more stressful between us that our drinking at home ramped up.
Yeah.
And that's where it became even more of a habit, the home drinking.
Yeah.
And then we got married and things weren't really good at the time for us. We weren't getting on, but we still had this wedding book, so we still got married.
Mm.
And we were drinking at our heaviest there. sense. And we were going out a lot. We were socializing a lot. We would say yes to a lot of things that we didn't really want to go to. There was just, I just remember that time was a lot of drinking. We were trying to moderate over the years. And then lockdown happened and drinking was, there was times where it was every day, especially that lockdown summer. That was like a really hot summer. And we found we were drinking.
Yeah, we were both working from home and we both finished at 5 o'clock. So as soon as sort of half five came, you know, first drinks getting poured.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite good that you wait until five, because a lot
only
of
only because
people,
we were working.
A lot of people that I talk about with the COVID drinking, and I think probably those that were on furlough and things like that, that, you know, 6 o'clock became 3 o'clock, and then some cases became midday. Yeah. You know, just get past.
I mean, maybe if it was the weekend, it probably would have started a bit earlier. But yeah, it was, I just remember we were having like online parties, online quiz nights, and yeah, it was lockdown, honestly, it felt like one big party.
Sorry, just going back, Terry, if it wasn't for the homeschooling, we probably would have started a bit earlier, to be honest, but I can't be going through math equations with my son half two in the afternoon, sort of.
Yeah.
The influence sort of thing.
Wouldn't have worked as well, would it? So,
exactly.
Like, when did it get really problematic to the point where you were just like, I got to do something about this? And had you considered stopping, or, you know, were those sorts of thoughts coming up? What did that landscape look like?
For me, I never considered drinking. I never thought that that was an option at the time. I then fell pregnant in sort of around COVID with our third son. And, you know, every time I've been pregnant, I can just stop drinking like that. It's just not, drinking while pregnant was not an option. However, I did have the odd glass of red wine here and there while pregnant, but I could just put it down. But I was like gagging until I had the baby. I was just like, right, I'm dying for a drink now. Like, that now's my time. I've done my 9 months sober. After we had our third son, things were a lot better for us. We was a lot happier. And we found that we couldn't go out as much now we've got the three children. So every weekend we would have like our time to ourselves where we'd put the kids to bed and we would drink. And started to get to the point where I was becoming a lot more emotional. We was having a lot more arguments. And I just started to not like that side of me. But when I was sober, I'd be like, no, I can't not drink. So I remember I had a friend who quit drinking, and I was like, oh, I could never do that. Like, I am totally boring if I don't have a drink. Like, no one's going to want to socialize with me. I'm not going to, like... And she was like, Alicia, are you mad? You are not boring. Like, why would you even say that about yourself? Like, and that sort of planted a small seed in my brain when she said that, because she's my best friend. And I thought she wouldn't chat shit to me. Like, I know she would have been telling the truth. Yeah. And anyway, so that went. But then, when our last son became around one, he was quite an easy child. Like, he was sleeping, so there was no sleepless nights. He was our easiest. So I started to go out, you know, for like birthdays and work Christmas parties. And I noticed that it was every 3 months I would have a real big blowout and do something completely out of my character. Like, once it was my birthday and we did a girls' brunch, like my mum and my auntie was there, and as soon as we left the restaurant, I decided to do a runner and run after the bus. I thought it'd be hilarious to run after the bus and jump on the bus.
The famous run,
yeah. And my cousin's a police officer, so she tackled me down to the ground.
Oh God!
I was just a complete mess. I had to be taken home by my mum and my auntie. Like, I was 37, and I'm just like, I was acting like that, and I just had enough of that, and then I would be fine. I would like try the next 3 months moderating and thinking, oh, I've got this in the bag now. And then something else would happen. I remember Christmas. I had got through the whole of Christmas, the whole of Christmas period without getting drunk. So I thought, yay, I've done it. And then Christmas Eve came and I finished a whole bottle of Ray and Nephew to myself, a whole quarter bottle. And I was completely drunk and I was hungover for the whole of Christmas Day. And I was so annoyed at myself. But it was almost like I had a celebration on Christmas Eve because I had to be moderating that whole of December. And as soon as Christmas Eve came, I thought, no, I can do this. I've got this. And I was just starting to realizing that I wasn't doing very well at moderating. And me and Ricky was arguing a lot more. And I started noticing that, you know, I was trying my hardest to moderate, but his drinking habits were sort of affecting mine, where he would bring home the drink for me. And I'd be like, but I'm not drinking tonight. Why are you bringing it home? But it was because he wanted to have a drink.
What happened is, at least you would say, let's moderate. And she said, you know, let's just keep it to the weekend, a Friday and a Saturday, or a Friday or a Saturday. But I don't know how I got away with this for so long. I would say, okay, fine, let's do it. So the week would start Monday. Oh, nobody likes Mondays. Let's have a drink. Oh, yeah. Go on then, she'd say. We're supposed to be moderating and go on then, just one. And then I'm a football fan. I don't just watch my team play football. I watch all football. So Tuesday night is Champions League. Oh, football's on. Can I have a drink?
Of course, well, yeah.
Go on then. Yeah. Wednesday, Champions League's on again.
Yeah.
Football's on. I'll have a drink. Yeah. And Thursday, you've got Europa League on. Oh, yeah. Football's on. I'll have a drink.
And weekend Premier League.
Exactly, yeah. And then so Friday, Saturday and Sunday, you know. So Friday we'd have a drink, that's per normal. Saturday we'd have a drink.
An excuse.
Yeah. Sunday, as you say, Premier League on, we'll have a drink. So, and every Sunday evening, right, we've spent the whole of last week drinking. Next week we're really going to try and moderate. And this went on for ages. I don't know how I got away with it, Terry. And what, as Alicia said, like, to sort of, when I would come home with a drink, I'd bring Alicia a drink also without even asking her, you know, and sometimes I'd sort of pour it for her without even telling her. I'd say, oh, babe, you got a drink on the side? Oh, thank you. So but that wasn't obviously, that was, the reason for that was to allow, to get permission for me to drink. Well, yeah. If she's drinking, I'm going to be allowed to drink. Yeah. Yeah, and as I say, that went on for a while. But I would say when it started to become a problem was, now, in the job that I'm currently working, and I'd say up into the last couple of years, I'd have clients with my job. We often take clients out for drinks and stuff like that. And obviously, I would come home. Alicia would have known that I've had a drink. But it came to a point where I was saying to Alicia that I'm taking clients out, or I'm going out with a client and I'm going out for a drink with them. But really, I'm not. I'm just in the drink, in the office after I was having a drink, or I catch train to work, public transport to and from work. You know, I'd get a drink from the shop on the way back to the train station, and I'd drink it on the train, you know, but I'll use the excuse of belief, I had a night meeting and we had a few drinks after. So I'm starting to mark my drink. I'm starting to lie about it now, you know. And when I'm coming home with drinks for Alicia, as I say, when I bought myself a drink, I'd buy her a drink. I sort of buy two of the same drink, you know. So yeah. She would, on display, I've got one, and hidden somewhere, I've got the other. So where she thinks I'm only having this amount, I'm having a double that amount. And I'd often try and get brownie points. If I didn't finish or couldn't finish the second bottle, I'd say to her, look, basically, I didn't drink that much. There's still a little bit of whiskey left in the bottle. She'll say, yeah, well done, so you don't need to drink. Little does she know that that's the second bottle that she doesn't know about.
Yeah.
It got to the point where I think I started to catch him out a few times. So I just said to Ricky, I was like, because I started noticing the patterns, the same patterns that my dad used to. So my dad used to leave a lot of empty bottles around that we would find. And I started to find some empty bottles. So I was like, you need help. Like, you can't, I don't think you can just stop. So I found a local AA class for him. And I think we had an argument once. I was like, get out of the house. And if you don't go to this meeting, don't bother coming back home.
My attitude was, I don't need to go to an AA meeting. You know, our house is lovely. I go to work. Our bills are paid. Our house is clean. We take the kids to football and swimming and theatre school every weekend. Bills are paid. We drive a nice car. I haven't got a problem.
You don't
just
look
like, to
like the alcoholics, yeah, you know, yeah, stereotyped here. And that's, yeah.
When Alicia gave me the ultimatum, I thought, I don't need to go to this meeting. To be honest, I was quite offended. And I planned to just go to the pub or an off license and get a drink and sit in the car by the time. But I thought, that's not going to look good. I've gone to an AA meeting,
yeah,
and then come back smelling of alcohol. So I thought, I'll just go to the meeting. And I did it before. I'm going to sit at the back. I'm not going to share. I'm going to be on my phone the whole time. The meeting's for an hour and a half. But actually, after about half an hour, I start to become engaged. I didn't share or anything. I started to listen, but I still thought, this isn't for me. And then I find myself back there the next week. And then the week after, and then the week after. And now I'm starting to share. Starting to get there early and having a chin wag with the other people there. You know, I've asked to join the WhatsApp group now. I've got the chips, you know. I didn't do any sort. I didn't do the steps. I didn't do the 90 meetings in 90 days. I didn't do any of that stuff. I think I just went for about 8 or 9 weeks because life happened, I think.
We were going on holiday and stuff.
I couldn't go for 3 weeks because we went summer holidays and then I can't remember. There was valid reasons because I was enjoying going. Why I didn't go. And then after about 3 weeks of not going, I thought, I'm going to try and do this for myself. You know, the meetings were great. That's what catapulted me into sobriety. You know, the people there, the experience that I've heard. I was in an environment where I wasn't alone, sort of thing. It was relatable, yeah. And what made me realize I had a problem, because at this point I still didn't think I had a problem. What made me realize I had a problem was, while I was not drinking, I would look at every scenario where I would drink. So, for an example, I would leave work and I'd say, oh, I'll stop off at that off license to get a drink to drink on the train. When I got off the train, oh, I'd stop off at that shop. And then when I got home, oh, I'd make up an excuse to go and buy a drink. And when I looked at all the scenarios in my head as to why I would drink, I would say to myself, what the hell was I doing? What was I thinking? You've got a problem.
Wow.
Nikki, you need to sort this out. And it was... And another thing, Terry, was at the end of the month of my first drinking, or sorry, my first, not drink, sobriety, yeah, my first sobriety month, sober month, I looked at my bank account and I said, what have I not paid? What I've screwed my credit rate in. What bill haven't I paid? The lease is going to be on my case. Ricky, you didn't pay this. When I really think about it, when I went through this thing, everything was paid, and I realized it was the alcohol. Because I'm not buying alcohol, I had suddenly had all this extra money in my bank account. I didn't tell her about it at the time.
That's mad.
The financial gain, and looking back at myself, thinking, you know, you're all these scenarios where you would be drinking, it's just ridiculous. So that's when I realized I had a problem.
That's amazing, that story, because I think the denial thing keeps people trapped for a really long time, because people, you know, the first part of that you were saying, you know, you just didn't look like the sort of person that would have a problem with drinking. And I think that in itself keeps people trapped, because I know when I was drinking too much and thinking about stopping, I would Google, am I an alcoholic? And, you know, and it would always come back with no. And to be honest, I don't really use that terminology on myself anyway, but it doesn't really matter what the terminology is. I was over drinking, right, for my life. And I wasn't feeling very good about that over drinking. But what's really fascinating about your story, it just feels like you managed to have that depth of thought that just thought, right, hang on, let me just look at my life and look at the scenario of finishing work until I go to bed and all the things that I'm managing to cram in or get access to in that time period. And then you were able to look at that objectively and say, that's nuts. What am I doing?
Absolutely.
That's really fascinating, actually. And I think that takes a lot of, I don't know what the right word is. I mean, courage, bravery, all of those things anyway, just to even put yourself in that meeting, I think that's so brave, especially for a guy, right? Because I think it is harder for men to do those sorts of things because of the way that we're brought up. You know, men don't need help, never need help, do they? You know, they don't cry, they don't need help, blah, blah, blah. So it's just fascinating that you were able to do that objectively. And so how does that tie in then with you, Alicia? So he was going to the meetings and were you still drinking at this point? Because there was a couple of weeks or so, wasn't there, you said?
Yeah, so he was coming back and I was really proud of him that he was able to stop. And I was excited to hear when he had said in the meetings. And I then thought, do you know what? So I think there was a point where he mentioned that, you know, people that go to these meetings don't necessarily go because they're an alcoholic. They go, they might have turned up because they were supporting their partner who was an alcoholic. And they decided, do you know what, alcohol's not serving me anymore too, so I'm going to quit. And I thought, wow, actually, if I could think like, I don't think he told me that for me to stop drinking, because he's never been like that. He's never ever told me that I've got an issue with drinking and I need to stop. So I thought, do you know what? I can actually not drink as well. Maybe I should try it. And the moment I thought that, I had a sudden sense of freedom. And I thought, if I joined Ricky on his journey, I think I will feel better. And I will feel like I'm not being held down to this thing of moderating that I was stressing myself constantly about and worried about going out and drinking too much. Like, I just had this sense of like a huge weight off my shoulder, basically a huge weight. And then I threw myself in, because I couldn't go to the meetings with him because of the kids, so I threw myself in listening to podcasts. Yours was the only one I found at the time, and I was religiously listening to you, and it was just my savior at the time. I was like, wow, I can relate to every single story that was being told. Like, there was parts of it that I could relate to, including yours. And then I read, because I then started to hear more about certain books, so I listened, and so I read The Unexpected Joys of Going Sober, and then I read the Claire Pooley one,
Sober Diaries,
that's it. And then I was like, wow, I'm into this now. I am totally, fully committed to this sober journey. And it was helping me more to relax, to sleep better, because I really suffered with my sleep, especially when I was drinking. I thought it was helping me sleep, but actually I realised it was not helping me one bit. Our communication in our marriage got way better.
Yeah. A lot better.
Like, I can't tell you like how different our relationship is now. Like, after, well, it was 15 years, almost 15 years at the time, but 16 years since, I can't. We discuss things more. We don't. Yeah. We do have the odd arguments.
It feels like just a breath of fresh air, isn't it? You know, and feels like we're getting to know each other again.
Yeah.
Everything just feels brand new and special again. You know, even down to sort of just, I wouldn't say discovering new things, because we've been together 16 years, but maybe things I'd forgotten about, or things that I didn't think were important. You know, it's just,
Or things that you missed, you know, like you didn't see. It's because also you mature a lot as well in that time. I still find it fascinating that we, you know, on a brain development level, we don't mature until we're nearly 30, which I find is nuts, you know. So we think we're an adult at 18, but we're still so young, 18, 20, even mid-20s, you know. And and then for you had a child in that time as well, and you know, and And then the drinking is just, there's a lot of growth and development that I think happens in those years. But you probably miss a lot of that with the hecticness of life and drinking. And you think the drinking's helping, but actually the drinking's keeping you trapped in, around the hamster wheel, just going round and round.
Yeah.
Feeling really bad. But you know, in the first sort of, I mean, what are you now? You're coming up to a year, aren't you? So you're not far off a year. Which is what a milestone.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, and to do it together as well, that's just so lovely. It's funny actually, because when I talk to people, some of the biggest challenges they have is in the relationship, or the, you know, the dynamic of one partner is still drinking and the other one isn't. Yeah. How does that affect each other? And you know, and it's I guess it's not always possible for couples to be as fortunate as you guys have in a way. Like, you've created that own fortune yourself, right? That's not, you know, it's not just luck. You've both made those decisions and massively improved your life. But it'd be interesting what people think when they listen to this, just how that dynamic changes. And as you said, it's got so much better for you.
Yeah, I think I think it was 2 weeks ahead of Alicia I was, but during those 2 weeks, you know, she'd be considerate. She'd say, babe, I know you're trying to stop drinking. Do you mind if I have a drink? Or, you know, she'd pour a drink and again, it wasn't a lot, but she might pour a drink and sort of not hide it from me so that I won't know she's drinking, but hide it from me so I wouldn't get the urge. And at the same time, I was saying to her, no, it's fine, you have a drink. And you know what, Tay, it might seem weird, but I think that really helped me at the beginning, that the fact that I could be around alcohol for those first 2 weeks and not drink it really made me think, it gave me a sense of willpower, determination. Like, I thought, yeah, I can do this. So to be fair, I didn't mind her drinking because it made me feel like I'm in control for the first time in a long, long time. I'm in control, you know, and even to this day, like when we had visitors, we still got alcohol in our cupboards. And, you know, it's just such a great feeling, a great sense of achievement and accomplishment that I can have all this alcohol in my house. Not a lot, but maybe a bottle, a couple for visitors. And no desire to go near me, to not even touch it.
Yeah.
Also for me, I wasn't having anyone. I was drinking less straight away because I wasn't having anyone buying it for me anymore.
Exactly.
Bring it for me.
Yeah.
It was easier for me to moderate in those few weeks. I have to say, if Ricky continued drinking, or if I continued drinking, I don't know if we would have done this long.
Yeah.
We really helped each other. I said, we're really lucky to have been in this position where we've both decided to stop drinking.
Yeah, towards the end of my drinking, Terry was, as I say, it was really bad. You know, there was masking, drinking, there was, it was really bad.
And when you compare, like, where you are now to that time, that difference, you know, what are the changes? Like, how have you changed?
For a start now, I don't know if you've seen our Instagram. We have an Instagram account. That we didn't even intend, you know, when we discussed going sober, it wasn't like, so we can open up an Instagram account and start blogging. It just happened. And actually what happened was, there was a time where we were traveling to Wales because my brother lives in Wales, and Ricky had said to me, oh, put on one of the podcasts that you're listening to, and we can listen to it when the kids fall asleep. So I was trying to download ones that Ricky could relate to. So I was finding ones from men speaking. And then I also wanted to find ones black men speaking, but we couldn't find any. And it kind of made me think, maybe we should start our own Instagram page, especially for black men as well, because there was a lack of, I would say, even black women speaking up about this subject. And, you know, sobriety doesn't have a colour. I know we're called Black and Sober on our Instagram, but it doesn't actually have a colour. Alcohol affects every type of person, every human being. can be affected by alcohol in some shape or form. So it was really important because I've also lost an uncle a few years ago to alcoholism as well. And he was a black man. So I just think if he had something like this when he was younger, this would have really helped someone like him because he was very, very sociable. So yeah, it's been really just eye-opening, just like delving into this whole new world that we didn't even know existed.
Yeah, and with the Instagram, at the meetings, you know, they do, at the AA meetings, they do encourage you to sort of offer service or, you know, be a sponsor. Because of our lifestyle, I haven't got the time to do that or the capacity to do that. So my way of sort of giving, I wouldn't say giving back, but my way of sort of offering support, you know, to other people is through this Instagram account.
Yeah, you know, and then we do have a podcast as well. Right. I remember I messaged you really early on. You were like, go for it. And we've got one called, it's called Black and Sober. It's on YouTube. Our videos are available on YouTube. Where we speak to people, not just from the black community, we're speaking to people who are interested in speaking with us and just navigating their way and our way through sobriety.
Yeah.
Awesome. That is so awesome. What's the Instagram? Let's get that so that people can find you.
So our Instagram is Black Sober Pod.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's the same name on YouTube, but we've got all on our Instagram, we've got all the links to our YouTube, Spotify, mm-hmm. and yes. Apple Music. And it's been lovely meeting so many new people and just all having this one thing in common. And I don't know, like I've never met a community so supportive in my life than the sober community. Yeah.
It's so true, isn't it? It's like in a weird way, it's like a little family, and it's really, really. I mean, I remember when I first started posting on my page, which was, I think back then, was Sober Single Mom. So it was like slightly different.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it was. I set it up 50 days in, and I was anonymous, which is stark contrast to what I am now. But I was anonymous and I was just trying to find my people, try and find people that were doing this thing that nobody else in my world was doing, you know? Mm. And then obviously when you go onto Instagram and you start posting, and there would just be all these people that would be giving me messages of support going, you're amazing, well done. Mm. Just gets better, keep going, this, that. And it's like, wow, who are all these people? They don't even know me. And they're G-ing me along at 50 days sober, you know? And it's so important. And it's so important to have a variety of voices in this space. And it's growing, and sobriety's growing. And the more that we send our stories out, or the more that we help people and we offer a listening ear, you know, that can change someone's life. That's happened, you know. I feel like that's happened in my life now. I feel like I've changed people's life. That's happening in your life, you know. You will change other people's lives for the better, and I just think that's a gift. It's a privilege to be in this position, and there is no better learning and sharing than from someone that's been there and done it and got the t-shirt, you know. And I commend you. I just think it's amazing, and I'm gonna have to get on your podcast at some point. You're gonna have to squeeze me in, I think. I'll I'll on it for you if you want me on there. What would you say has been the hardest bits for you? What's been the most difficult challenges getting sober?
I would say, I mean, I love the fact that I have so much more clarity in my life. However, my brain is constantly on, switched on. I think someone described it as you're now living your life in HD. Everything's switched on and more visual. So I'm dealing with a lot of going back to childhood trauma.
Yeah.
Trying to process that, trying to process why I acted the way I did.
Yeah.
So I would think dealing with my emotions has been the hardest bit for me. But I'm learning, I'm getting better. I've even like, and I feel like by doing that, it's given me a lot more self-care. So I am taking my feelings and the way my body and mind feels more into consideration. So whereas before I used to, say for example, I was going out at the weekend with some friends and I was feeling really run down and I just needed to sleep that weekend, I'd be like, don't worry, I'm going to have a drink and I will be switched on and ready to party. Whereas I wasn't really listening to my body, I wasn't really listening to myself, that I needed to rest and I was making things worse. Where now I'm like more in tune with myself and, you know, taking certain supplements at certain time of the month because I know my body needs more, you know, more nourishment at that time. So that has been hard to kind of find in that, but I am getting there.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I love that. You just put yourself in a position where you're just able to take better care of yourself. And that feels good. Just on its own, doesn't it? Yeah. What about you, Ricky?
I'll say, the hardest thing for me is, I'll probably say finding habit to replace that habit. So, I mean, don't smoke or do drugs or anything like that. So what happened with me, Terry, is I swapped the alcohol for snacks, sort of chips, sweets, chocolate. And I have put on a little bit of weight, which working on at the moment now. And then the other thing, I'll probably say that's probably about it. I mean,
you're socializing.
Yeah, so yes, that's a big one. Thanks, Alicia. Socializing. I mean, you know, we've been to a few weddings sober. Really good weddings, fantastic. Usually when the party is happening, you know, I'll have a few drinks on me. I'll be on the dance floor. I'll be saying to Alicia, "Come on, first dance, let's go." But you know, these times I was just very reserved. You know, I sat at my table. I was communicating with people. I was having a chat, but I just wasn't that loud, confident person that socializing all the time. You know, I don't hide away in the corner. You know, I'm still all right to have a conversation and that. But
it's just learning.
Yeah, just learning to get that self confidence without the alcohol. You know, that will come in time, slowly but surely. I'd say slowly I'm learning to deal with it. I mean, doing these podcasts, you know, not just our own podcast, but going on other podcasts and speaking with people, that's helped for me to gain a bit of self-confidence. So I'm not all the way there yet, but I'd say slowly but surely, it will definitely come.
Do you know what? It's so interesting, actually, that you say that, because nearly everybody that I talk to says when they stop drinking, they realize that in certain situations, especially social situations, they're much more introverted than they thought they were. And I was the same. Like, I was dancing on tables, for God's sake, and on bars. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in my late 30s, I mean, who was I? But I was doing that. But I would never do that now. Like, I would just, I blend into the background. And I think, actually, I've learned that that's all right to do that. I don't have to be that big extrovert. Sometimes that little extrovert will come out every now and then. But more often than not, I've just realised I'm just not as big a personality as when I was drinking. You know, it's like there is that contrast there. So I think that's really normal to have that, go through that and have that feeling. And so on the flip side then, before we go into your tips, what would you say has been like the biggest gain?
The biggest gain, I would say our marriage, our relationship, because, you know, we've been together for 16 years now. I would say this is the best we have been relationship-wise. Even before we had kids, like, we're just having a lot more fun. We've got a lot more time on our hands, a lot more lovely sleep to have. Like, we're just happier. I just find we're happier people.
Yeah.
And also to the kids, just spending time with the kids and having a lot more patience with them. I would say just our household has gained. Mm-hmm. Our household has gained, like, two people, not one person, just two people have made improvements on their self. And so I think that's, like, the gain for us as a family.
That's a game changer, isn't it?
Yeah, as Alicia says, our marriage is just catapulted again. Just gone so much better. As I said, I replaced the drink, the alcohol with the snacks a lot. And one night I bought a mint Aero home, and I was really looking forward to it because it's my favorite chocolate. Alicia got hold of it; she ate half of it, and I was like, "What are you doing, Alicia? That's my favorite chocolate." And she's gone, "Mint Aero is my favorite chocolate." And for all of our relationship, we never knew that about each other. So although it's something small, I mean, how could we not know what each other's favorite chocolate is? Exactly. But it came through being sober, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's just one of many hundreds of thousands of things, you know, that sort of excites. It might not, you know, it might not sound a lot, but
it's just tuning in, isn't it? It's really tuning in to each other and just tuning into yourself and tuning into your life. I think
I hope you don't mind me saying, Terry, as well, sort of our intimacy, our sex life as well.
Yeah.
Again, you probably not see now, I like to use the word catapulted, but it's another thing that has, you know, gone for the better. And, you know, it's just, Sorry,
I think it's amazing that you share that, because I talk, and I felt similar too. I talk to people and I felt this way, that having sex sober was really frightening, because I think I'd spent a long time, and this is what other people tell me about, you know, spending a lot of time having sex under the influence, and you just get into that pattern to the point where it's the only way that you know how to do it. And when you're sober, that feels like such a scary thing to do, but then to know that you can do it and then it can actually be so much better. I mean, I agree completely with you as well. It's just a game changer, not being drunk in bed.
I think the majority of the time that I did do it, I was drunk, and then now, even just health wise I am much more healthier inside, like, can't even explain, like, talking about getting too much information, but I am a lot healthier by not drinking. Like, it's just, crazy.
You feel good as well, though. I mean, I think it helps to encourage better, you're healthier mentally. You feel proud of yourself. You feel good about yourself. You feel like you can achieve something quite big, because not everyone can do this, right? And so whilst initially it feels like, oh God, I'm losing this and I'm losing that, and this is going to be hard, and how am I going to cope? That soon starts to turn into, God, I'm so, you know, I feel so good that I can do this, and I've proven to myself that I can actually enjoy life. I can enjoy it more without drinking. Yeah. Not something that you see in the first, maybe even, like, I don't know, up to 100 days. You can't see that depth. Only when you're sort of where you are now, coming up to a year. Like, and what's so nice as well is I remembered a year was, you know, not a really big turning point, big shift in my sobriety, and then a year and a half, and then 2 years. And it just, like, kept evolve. It still evolves now. I still feel like, from year three to year five has been massive. And three, I thought I was all over it. Like, I thought I was, it was.
Well, that's exciting to know.
Yeah, I was nailing it, but I can't believe the jumps in growth in just that, and confidence and all those sorts of things in that time even. So someone said to me this morning, you know, is it really the gift that keeps on giving? And I was like, well, to me it has been, and that's what everyone else is saying, but yeah, so it's a definite yes for me. But I think that's just so cool. What would be your top three tips then? We're gonna get double tips here, six tips. So
I hope you do, yes. My first one was, I don't know whether it was my algorithm, but I started, sober pages started popping up on my Instagram.
Yeah.
So then I went and started following them, And then I thought I started sharing a few bits on my personal page, and I thought, oh, I don't want to piss or annoy people off. Like, oh, just shut up about being sober. We know you're sober. Like, and you know, even some family, like, my auntie is just like not interested in what am I doing? I'm crazy. I'm mad. Like, doing this also. So that's why, like, one of the reasons why I opened up a sober page, so people who wanted to follow can follow and don't feel like they have to listen to me banging on about it. So I would say, like, open up a private page and just start following maybe sober pages or quote pages, because I feel like as soon as I switch off from my personal page to my sober page, I feel different in myself. So something on my personal page might, I don't know, get on my nerves, or someone's just said something that's annoyed me. But as soon as I go onto my sober page, I feel like calmness. Like, wow, I'm at home and this is what I really want to be doing and what I want to be looking at. So I definitely say open up like a separate page to have like sort of your, like a, I don't know, just like something where you can go to and just explore. That made me feel better. Reading. So I read this book. I would say reading really helped me. And it helped me to relax before bed and to switch off and to just to give me something else to think about. So reading sober stories really helps me. And then I've mentioned it before about the self-care. Just thinking about how you're feeling and what you as a person want to do. And it created a lot more boundaries and I felt better for it. So if I said, oh, I don't want to go out to that event or something, and I don't go, I just feel like I've got a lot of respect for myself and listening to what I want to do. So I would say, like, that really helped me.
Yeah,
I wasn't tasting that drink that I used to taste.
Awesome. Ricky, what about you?
So for me, one thing I learned from the meetings is to just take one day at a time. You know, when I first went to sort of my meetings, and you know, I'm hearing people are 20 years sober, 10 years sober, 5 years sober. You know, I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to get to even 1 year sober, 6 months? Yeah. And one thing I learned is don't look at next week or next year, just focus on the day. You just take one day at a time. And if you know you can go to bed without having a drink that day, you have achieved something massive. Yeah. It may sound like just a day, but believe me, it's not just a day, you know. So take one day at a time. My second bit of advice was a bit like my scenario, you know, look back at yourself when you was drinking, you know, all the times you would drink, how you would act when you drink, the amount of money you would spend while you're drinking, and look back at yourself and say, are you really happy with that person? You know, that's what kept me going. Now, if you're not happy with that person, and don't go back and drink, you know, how you would act, you know, at a work party or a family gathering or a do, are you happy with the person? Sending 100 messages to people that were there the night before. Was I okay? Did I say anything out of line? You haven't got that problem anymore. You haven't got that worry anymore because you know how you acted and you was yourself. Right, number three for me is to don't be afraid to seek support. You know, there's loads of things out there. As Alicia said, it's a very sort of loving and supporting community. You know, if there's always something to suit your style, you know, whether it's an AA meeting, a podcast, you know, just speaking to someone, it might be sharing with your family members, you know, so just don't be afraid to seek support or accept support that's being offered to you, because along your journey, you will get offered a lot of support, and don't be afraid to take it, because the support is mostly coming from people that can relate to you and were in your position. So yeah, that's my three sort of tips.
I think they're brilliant. They're all brilliant. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much as well. I wish we had another 3 hours. I think I could sit and talk to you all day. I love hearing your stories, and As always, like you were saying earlier, Alicia, you know, I just think there's like thread between us, isn't there, that keep that is kind of ties us together in a nice way, because we relate to each other, because we've been down similar paths and we come through the other side, and now we're giving back and helping. And I think that, yeah, I mean, good, all the best of luck with your Black Sober Pod and the YouTube and the page. And
thank you so much, Tara. You've been my biggest inspiration, so thank you. Because if I didn't find your podcast at the time to help me, I don't know if I'd be in this position. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You made me get a bit emotional. I get, you know, I'm like, get a bit emotional with these things.
But, so just the end of this, Terry, there'll be times where I'm in the house, I call Alicia, I think she's ignoring me or not hearing me, and I say, Alicia, I'm talking to you. She'd pull out a headphone and say, oh, sorry, I'm just listening to Sassy Sober Mind podcast. So, literally, all the time.
Doing the housework.
I love it. I sometimes it kind of blows my mind a bit when I think about all the people that listen to the show and have probably got me nattering in their ears. But that really means a lot, and I really appreciate that feedback, and I'm obviously delighted to have been a big part of your early journey, and now you're on my show, and you know, maybe one day I'll be on yours, and it's just it's so nice how it's all tied together. And you know, you two should be so proud of yourself, and I think so many people will get a lot from this conversation. And yeah, thank you for being my first husband and wife team as well. Like, you're a great thank you. And thank you to everyone else. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.